Hey guys, what's up? This is Jordan with Your Instep, sitting down with SCG Indianapolis champ Riley Curran. Who took first place this past Sunday with the combo Elves deck that you see on Star City Games. So Riley, for those of us that are unfamiliar with Legacy, what is Elves?
It's a creature deck, I guess. It's a combo deck that kills with creatures.
Okay. So that's not what you usually expect out of combo decks.
Yeah, normally you expect combo decks, you expect them playing a bunch of blue cards, and then you die to a bunch of spells in a turn, or like an infinite combo of some kind. That's not the case here.
Okay. Now, I learned my love of the deck from Riley. So what are the key components of the combo Elves deck? So you have Wirewood Symbiote, right?
Really, the key components are it just makes a bunch of mana, and then it tries to either get a bunch of card advantage through various means, or kill them with a Curve Behemoth with a bunch of dudes.
Okay. So the big cards in the deck, top three big cards in the deck, if that's even possible.
So the most important cards of the deck, I'm not sure about the order in this one, but probably like Natural Order, Glimpse, Zenith, and then Symbiote. It's the Symbiote Visionary combination are how you win your games. And having 16x cards that matter in your deck is why the deck's so strong. Against discard and counter magic, you just have a lot of things that do something, and that matter.
So yeah, the best feeling in the world is when you think you have no outs, and then you draw a natural order, and then literally just win the game.
You just kind of shrug your shoulders and, oh, you're dead.
Yeah, you're just like, or you draw the cradle to hard cast the Crater of Behemoth in your hand, and generate a million mana, and you're like, well, does this kill you?
Sort of like when you're playing Storm, I'm like, oh, ad nauseum. Huh.
Sick, yeah.
Excellent.
No, it's great when you have a 15 guys out, drop Crater of Behemoth, and let your opponent do the math. He's like, I'm going to attack you. What's your life total? You're dead? Sick. Good game. Now, there was an interesting article. You obviously, based on your results, would call this deck Tier 1.
I would.
You would call it one of the best decks in the format?
I think it is, but it has this caveat of also being one of the most difficult.
Sure, and that's definitely something you hear from a lot of people, that it is one of the hardest decks to play. Because of, well, what would you say that is? Multiple lines? Like, you have a billion lines.
You have multiple tutors. Like, the fetch lands actually do more than just get lands, because you have Dry Driver in your deck.
Right.
And you have, Natural Order. You care about rule spells a lot, because you have to sequence properly.
Sure.
So if you play your guys in the wrong order, they might be able to use a sword to break up your mana combo.
Right, and then you're kind of just screwed.
Yeah.
And you're out of luck. So Josh Ravitz called the deck the worst playable deck in the format. Your thoughts?
I think it's not a completely unfair statement. And I think part of that is the difficulty barrier.
So the average person that picks up the deck is bad with it.
Yeah, like the good Elves players really stand out.
Right.
But they're the ones that have a lion's share of the results of the deck.
I mean, you have how many SCG Open Top? It's five,
I believe. Five, yeah.
Five all with Elves, a couple of Grand Prix Day 2s, late Day 2s.
Yeah.
With Elves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely, when you know how to play it, you're not losing.
Yeah.
So that's for those of you that don't know Legacy, that's kind of the primer. Let's talk about actual cards. Because I know every week at Legacy Night, I ask you what list we're playing, and you always lie to me, and I end up playing not the same list as you.
Well, no, you asked me a couple of days out, and then I changed my mind in the next, 48 hours.
It seems like you changed it like 20 minutes before the event.
Yes, but that's because I play that so much. Playing the same old list doesn't help me as much. I'd rather try new things, new cards.
Sure.
That's what I'm doing.
Now, how many cards did you play in your main deck at SCG Open?
I played the full 61.
So the full 61. Now, the first time, I don't know if it was the first time you've ever done this, but the first time I remember you doing this was at SCG Columbus in January, and I called you absolutely terrible, and I was like, well, there's no way that works, and you just kept doing it.
Yeah, it's mostly I'm just lazy and I don't know what to cut, but I think the downsides of having a 61st versus your 60th card is pretty low, but having all the tutor targets you want, and having the full complement of natural orders as your big business spell is really nice to have.
So that was what you added, was the fourth natural order.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it was, as well as being able to main deck the Viridian Shaman, and now I'm doing a Scavenging Ooze in the main deck as well.
Right, and then what was cut for the Scavenging Ooze? Because I know that's a card you go back and forth on a lot. Was it a Nettle Sentinel?
Yeah, it was a Nettle Sentinel.
Okay.
Yeah, just a little bit of a hedge towards playing against the mid-range blue decks where your Heritage Druid combo engine is not... Mana engine, rather, is not always reliable.
And you're not trying to combo them out. You just want to win the long, grindy game
That's exactly it.
Cast an actual
I mean, the only card actually it's kind of awkward to cut Nettle Sentinel. It's the only elf in your deck you actually want to play in multiples.
Right.
Everything else you just want one so you can, you know, do that thing.
Do that thing one time and then you're fine.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of an awkward concession, but it's awkward to play 61 cards, but, I guess.
Yeah, so I've been shaving down on the Brooch Wars and Heritages various points playing, but I've never gone before four Nettle Sentinels. I don't think I really missed them.
Okay.
Most because I played against all fair decks and I shaved down to very few of the mana guys post board.
Now, if you play against the combo deck, do you kick yourself a little bit?
Well, if they're a graveyard based combo deck, no, because I've scavenged
so you feel like a genius, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So sideboard Meekstone. That's excellent. In every other elves list that I've looked at for the past, Meekstone's like a thing, but it's not really a thing. Mm-hmm. Tarmogoyf's a tough card to kill.
Yeah, it's not Tarmogoyf as much as it is Delver of Secrets.
Delver too. Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, that like when I play against the Delver decks, that's the card that I am most afraid of. Not their sideboard hate cards. It's just dying before I can do my thing.
Do your combo, or like you get one thing countered, and then you have to rebuild, and it's awkward. Nolrod, did you get to cast it at all?
In this tournament, no. But in the last time when I played it, I played against the Mud deck with Forge Masters and actually Artifact Lands, so I just turned those off completely.
Okay.
And I cast it against a Death and Taxes player, and he couldn't activate the Vial, he couldn't activate Umezawa's Jite, he couldn't activate the Ratchet Bomb he brought in. This was in the Swiss, not in the top eight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Ratchet Bomb.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
I brought it in the finals because my opponent had Jit and yes. Engineered Explosives.
Yeah, and then we never actually saw it, which was a little sad. Yeah. That would have been great in the third game of that set, at least.
Yeah, he played and activated three explosives,
which was...
Well, I guess he only activated two of them.
He drew three, he played all three, didn't he?
Yeah, I blew up one without Verdant Shaman.
Right. Sylvan Library. Now, if you don't know what Sylvan Library does, because it doesn't see a ton of play.
It should, but it does not.
During your draw step, you get to top, essentially.
Okay, so I could just pull up the Oracle Text, but I'm not going to do that. So what it does is you draw your card for turn, and then you draw two additional cards, and then you may put back any number of cards you have drawn this turn, or pay for life to keep each additional card. So it basically lets you top every turn, you know, top as it says it's mine top.
Right.
But you can also just pay life to draw extra cards. And another kind of thing comes up occasionally is if you draw cards before your draw step...
You can put those back.
You can put this back. We usually need a judge to help you with that one.
Right. So I noticed that on the Oracle, because that's a ruling. Let's say you like Brainstorm and then go into Sylvanas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to pay to take your cards from Brainstorm? Do you have to pay the life to keep those?
Because the
way the card reads is...
You have to put cards back you've drawn this turn. And those include the cards from the Brainstorm.
Or pay the life.
Real life.
So brainstorming before your Sylvan Library.
That trigger only happens when you're drawing cards with library.
Right. Okay.
So
that's a really confusing.
Yeah, it's
get a judge.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, and like it's hard for your opponent to keep track of it. It's hard for you to keep track of it and be, you know, it's easy to abuse.
Right.
So just call a judge over and help and just
have them get you through the turn.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Makes sense.
I've never seen it come up and be correct to do.
Yeah,
but
I couldn't figure it out when I was reading the ruling. I was like, when did this ever happen? But how did that do for you, Sylvan Library?
It performed really well. I think in my interview I said it overperformed,
yeah.
But I kind of expected it to be good where I brought it in.
Mm-hmm.
I just put it in play. My opponents were... Most of my opponent's sideboard plan involved just killing all the things, and if I have library play, it really... Weakens that playing because they don't have the pressure on me to make me not draw three cards of library.
Right, because you can take eight life if they're just bolting all your dudes.
If they're bolting, I want library a little less. But if you know they're just playing a bunch of Source Plowshares or Abrupt Decays or whatever, Gari Charm came up a lot. Just having a creature, a permanent play that's not a creature, which is what they're prepared to interact with, is really really handy.
Did you find yourself paying a lot of life a lot of times? Like, I know in the finals you paid eight life straight away, right?
I think every time my first draw was draw three.
Just cause.
Just pay eight.
Yeah.
Because there was enough pressure on me, and, like, the, just having the random idiots in play, just like Metal Saddles, get your cradle powered up, was well enough worth paying the life to get them.
Sure. And you're not setting this in matchups where life matters anyway, so...
I did board it in against my Rug Delver opponent in the top eight.
Okay.
But that's because I knew his list.
Right,
and I knew he had a bunch of hate cards in his sideboard, so I wanted to be able to fight through that.
Sure, sure. And did you get to cast it?
I did, and it was really good.
Would you go up to two in the side, or do you think it's an effect you really only want one of?
I don't know. Maybe I'm supposed to, you know, give away my tech, but I think I might play one in the main deck at the Invitational, as well as one on my sideboard.
Okay. Oh, so it's that good?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, if you don't want to give up tech while we're talking about it, you don't have to.
Yeah, but. Well, that's fine. Well, I don't care.
Okay.
It's like the secret's already out. I'm playing Elves in the Invitational.
Right.
Everyone knows it. They sit down against me. They know who I am. I'm playing Elves.
Right.
It's not a secret.
No, that's fair enough. World Spineworm. That is a new addition to the sideboard for most players as well. When are we bringing this card in? And it's good.
Yeah, I wish I had a really good answer to this question. I really don't. The tech came about from what GPTC Cuneo was playing it.
Mm-hmm.
I sit across from every players meeting at the same Grand Prix. We're right at each other at the players meeting.
Right.
And I asked him if he's playing anything sweet in his deck. Yeah, I'm playing this World Spy War. I'm like, whoa.
Talk to me. Yeah.
So yeah, he said, yeah, just guy. You can show tone to play. You can natural order for it. And it can race Crystal Brand or Emrakul. Because against Emrakul, you sacrifice, and then the trigger happens, and you have 3 5/5s. And against Crystal Brand, they can't. It just races it straight up. It's a 15/15 trampler. They can't block and save it.
Wow. Okay.
And then it has other applications where, like, you know, you're playing against a deck where you want Progenitus. But it sort of does the same thing in a lot of situations where it's just a big guy that they can't kill that just kills them immediately.
Sure. So,
but it survives through Toxic Deluge.
That's true.
Gets submerged, so there's that tension there.
Did you ever find yourself casting one and wanting the other between World Spineworm and Progenitus?
Actually, at the opening in Cincinnati, I brought in both, which might be wrong, might be not. I don't test. I don't really know. But
by the way, guys, Riley is not the guy to go to if you want conclusive data.
Yeah, I just play that so long, it's all intuitive. I just kind of go with what it feels right at the time. Yeah. And I got a World Spine Worm against my Jund opponent, who I knew would not have submerges. So I guess in that situation, I'd rather have Worm. And he had a Toxic Deluge in his hand that would have killed my Progenitus, but not my World Spine Worm.
Okay. That's fair enough. Including it potentially in the Invitational as a card you'd cut?
It's a card that I'm not sure is necessary to have in the sideboard.
Okay.
So if I want to try to make room for a second library, that's probably what I'm looking for the cut.
Is the World Spy Worm.
Yeah. Like, I think right now my the cards on my sideboard are at least 6 discard spells, the 4th Natural Order if it's not in the main deck, Scavenging Ooze is not in the main deck, and then library, I think at this point is proven to be.
Include, right? Yeah.
I think I'm not going to leave home without that one again.
It's safe to say that won you games, right?
And 3 decays. Like at this point, like your sideboard is really tight.
You're looking at 3 Cabals, 3 Thoughtseize, 3 decays.
Yeah, and then like
auto 9.
Yeah, and then like I want when I cut the white for the Gadgeteague and the Pride Mage, you look for overlap, and Null Rod was the answer I found that kind of did similar things. Where Null Rod answers the artifact mana from Storm.
Mm-hmm.
It answers Jit occasionally, like Prime Mage would. But, like, yeah, it's a permanent play. It's a permanent that you can put into play that's not a creature, which is, when people are boarding in a bunch of creatures against you, is nice to have that different angle of attack.
Sure, now that you mentioned something about cutting the white, the list is pretty much mono-green main deck,
mm-hmm.
With black being the only thing for Deathrite Shaman.
That's correct.
Sideboard, you seem to bounce a lot, you know, just from our conversations between white for Quarian Ranger and Gadgeteague, both of which are insane cards.
Yeah, he means Quasali Pride Mage, not Quasali Ranger.
Yeah, Quasali Pride Mage and Gadgeteague. And then no white, just green.
Yeah, like...
Green black for Replicate.
Yeah, like, the thing is, like, the Pride Mage is, like, a fine card, but not necessary.
Right.
And it's... The Teague is the card I really want white for, because it's such a powerful card to put into play against Storm deck.
Right, they
and it's you have Zenith in your deck. Right? It's such a low cost but high reward. Right.
three mana wins you the game, essentially.
But I don't see a lot of Storm struggle these opens, so I don't hedge against them maybe as much as I should.
I've been playing the card lately and I love it, and mm-hmm. at your recommendation pretty much. Mm-hmm.
I think the card is very good, and if you know in more open meta game where you might expect more Storm, or you know, obviously like there are other decks that matter against, you know.
Sure.
But it's very good at what it does. So if you're expecting decks that are playing non-creature spells cost four more, Gattateak is a good card. I don't really like it against the control decks.
Okay.
Mostly because you have cards in your deck, it turns off.
Right. It does turn off your natural orders and your green suns.
Yeah, so like it's actually like a reasonable card against you from like Maverick or what have you.
Right. Now, so what do you think about maybe including it in the sideboard and just not playing the Savannah? Is it because you do have all the tutor targets?
Oh, yeah. There was actually a list at the Bazaar of Moxen a year ago, I think, that had Pride Mage and T without a Savannah in the deck, and they're playing blue for counter magic.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know if I agree with that totally, but like, what do you think about just not even the blue, just the land base you have? Because you have Birthful Rangers, you have your Deathrite Challenge, you have your Green Sun, the Natural Orders.
I just think, like, right now, I don't think there's enough of a reason to want to have them. Okay. And especially with there's just very few enchantments that you're really worried about right now. People aren't playing Moat anymore. Humility aren't seeing a lot of play.
Sure, sure.
The one thing you really lose out on is the ability to Zenith for Pride Mage against Miracles.
Yeah.
Like one of the reasons I would play T before as well was against Miracles. They couldn't cast Jace. They couldn't cast Wrath of God. They couldn't, I guess, Supreme Verdict. What they play, they can't cast Terminus. They can't cast their Entreat the Angels. They just can't do things. But now they have like multiple main deck Caracas, and I've replaced some of my Cyber cards with Answers for Sensei Divine Top, which is a good way to fight the deck. Null Rod and Pithing Needle both fight that card.
If they don't have those, then they're just dead.
Because the way they beat you is they have the soft lock counterbalance, which you can beat with Abrupt Decay. You can just get ahead of it on board, but your combo doesn't work because it requires attacking, and they can just Terminus before you attack.
Right, right.
So if you can eliminate their ability to do that, they can't stop your combo on the board at instant speed. So the way I played a match in Cincinnati where I fought a different way, where I just cast Viridian Shaman every turn through the use of Return to My Hand with Symbiote on his top before combat. So at that decision, when I had mana floating, creatures in play, mana untapped, he had to decide whether to not the Wrath then. And he, obviously, every time, I was never enough to make him do it. And I would just sit there in a crew value, and then eventually I was able to do it and then make him force him to Terminus and then combo kill him afterwards.
Okay. And that's what you say constantly, just keep your hand full.
Yeah, I just made sure I did not let that Terminus be an excellent card. It would always be good, but it wouldn't be excellent.
You would get two or three for one, but...
Yeah, yeah.
But no one will just blow you out. Okay, okay. This card package is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. Cabal Therapies and Thought Seizes. Now, there was an interesting play. I know we talked about it on the show for a minute. Cabal Therapy in the Dark against a blue deck. Game two. What is your name? Turn one, fetch for a Bayou, naming...
So, the interesting thing is, I've been known to... usually be pretty good with Cabal Therapy, the card. But I don't bring against all the blue decks. When I'm playing against Stoneforge Mystic specifically, I bring in Cabal Therapy. Because it gave me a free card to name. But against if I'm playing against like a bug deck that I might want it against for various hate permanents, if I don't know they're playing.
Sure.
Or Miracles, I'll bring in Thoughtseize because missing is so detrimental in those matchups.
Yeah, right.
Like if you're casting on turn one, I don't want the gas between top and counterbalance. I just want to be able to hit it. I think that's more important than getting the value of the flashback.
Okay. So you'll just... Okay. Absolutely makes sense. That's really all I have. Fun note. How bad is it to draw Progenitus?
It's real bad unless your opponent has Liliana and you discard it and you feel real smart.
Then you feel like a genius. Yeah. I just drew that on purpose. Turn two. NBD.
Yeah. I remember there was a hand recently where I kept... almost on the press, like it was like a mold of five except Progenitus in him. Like he was playing Kandra Turok and Liliana's deck, so it's just a free card to discard to those cards.
Right, exactly. It'd be like, him me please at that point. Yeah, no, it turns a good hand into a bad one really quick.
Yeah.
I did have one more question to ask you. You know what notes would be wonderful in situations like this?
Wouldn't it?
What would you say to Elv players? Because especially in our meta, it seems like there's like 10 Elv players now.
It's
picked up because
there's a whole pack of people who
follow
who watch me play and then are impressed and pick up the deck.
Yeah, and it's not easy. So what I mean, like, it's definitely going to test it. It's not something you just pick up. For listeners that might not be familiar with Riley, he's standing behind me in like a practice game, and he goes, "Why don't you just kill him now?" And I had no. It was my second game ever with the deck, and I was like, "I have like one mana in play." And he's like, "Yeah, that's all you need to kill him." And like, I couldn't figure out how, and you killed him with my hand, and it was embarrassing for me. What would you say to someone that wants to get good at this deck?
This, like, it requires a lot of reps. You just have to play it a bunch.
Okay.
Like, someone could tell you the basic interactions, but it interacts with other decks a lot differently than, you know, a Storm combo deck would, to where all of their cards do something against you. You just have to be careful and play around all of them. And without playing the matchup a lot, it's hard to know what's the most important. But generally, it's drawing cards and not getting blown out by Wraths against fair decks.
Sure.
And just killing them as quick as possible while disrupting against combo. It's hard to do that without knowing. So what you have to do is just grind games.
You play a ton of Legacy.
I've played a lot of Legacy.
So this is...
I'm very fortunate to have played on both sides a lot of these matchups. Maybe not, you know, always a deck versus Elves, but I've played, you know... I've played Storm, I've played Stoneblade, Delver, Miracles, etc., etc.
You know how they work, and you know what their game plan
is. I guess it's not just a symptom of playing the Elves combo deck. It's just, in order to perform well in Legacy, you not only have to know your own deck, but you have to know what the other decks are doing, too.
Sure. More so than like a Standard or a Modern, where...
Yeah, that's part of the tricky part of Elves, is that you have so many options that are just slightly different than one another. All your guys are just 1/1s that make mana, basically.
Right.
But they all have slightly different functions. So when you have the tutor abilities in Green Sun Zenith and your fetch lands and your natural orders and just your sequencing in general, you have to sort of learn what's more important, what can I afford to lose, and that just all comes with experience. And I've been playing the deck basically nonstop since 2010. And it's in its various forms, back when survival was legal, the misstep era, the whole thing. And it's because I have that huge experience, I stand behind people like Jordan, who I can just play and play and play and play, and I know what to do, but like, they don't always see the line that I do.
Because you just look at it and go, oh, well, that's obviously the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's just from reps. I've just played the deck so much.
Sure.
And so yeah, just... Another thing is, don't just goldfish. Test against an opponent.
That seems really bad, goldfishing, because anyone can combo on turn 3 with nothing to do.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not just advice for Elves. It's playing against a real opponent is really more important than just being able to dirtle through your deck and just tap and untap things.
Now, as your friend, do you have these cards on Modo?
I do not have these cards on Modo.
Rats.
In fact, I don't have any constructed cards on Modo. I used to have like a Pauper deck, but no longer. I've drafted a couple times. I don't really... mode as much as I should.
Well, hey man, it was great. Thank you very much. Do you have any shout outs to anybody?
I'd like to do a shout out to my buddy Mike Kenny, who's giving me a Standard deck for the upcoming Invitational.
Oh man, the name drop. He didn't get the name drop on the interview. He got a friend from home, but
which was a little strong, but
he didn't want to give away the tech. He's a good guy.
Didn't want to give away the tech. Fair enough. So everybody that listens to the show knows now. But so eight of them. All eight of them. But thanks, man, for coming on. I appreciate it. It's late, so get you out of here. But thank you very much. Go to atyourinstep.com for all your podcast stuff and buy your cards. Buy your Gaia's Cradles and your Fetchlands and your Bayous from empirecards.com. You're not going to get a discount. Just buy from there. So thanks, guys. Have a good one. Bye-bye.